Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Over the Monster podcast. My name is Brian Joyner. I am joined today by the new site manager for Over the Monster, Dan Secatore. Dan, say hello to your devoted legion of fans that you've
heard from Matt. Brian, what is happening? I am excited to be here. I got a new microphone. I'm borrowing my five-year-old's headphones. I'm pumped. It's been a long time coming.
Well, noted scamp Jake Devereaux gave you a microphone, and it didn't quite work.
Because it did. I think he was trying to keep me out of the podcast game.
Can't do it, Jake.
I think that's what he was
doing. Can't do it. Dan, as you will be running our lives for the next few years, why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
I don't know if the listeners really want to hear too much about myself in a monologue at the beginning of the podcast, because I have a feeling that's just going to come out as I ramble for the next, how long is this going to take? 2 hours? 3 hours? I think it's going to take us a while. I joined the site a couple of months ago. I am a writer living in Boston. Writer being, I guess, my third career after a few years in politics, a few years as a anti-money laundering attorney. That was by far the worst of the three careers, by the way.
We're very pro-money laundering here.
That's true. Yes. No, I know. I've seen Vox's books. I know. I am a writer now living in Boston. I used to do restaurant and bar reviews. That's usually the thing that people are most excited when I tell them. And now I sit at home and write about the Sox. I'll take it. I was eating and drinking too much in the old job anyway, so this is better.
Nice. I think that this makes you, I don't know if there even was a site manager before Mark Normandin, but you are definitely the first site manager in over a decade to actually live in Boston. So
I was surprised when I came on board and I sent an email to the staff and I was like, hey, let's get together. I want to meet you guys in person. I'm really sick of living by Zoom. Let's get some beers. And I think all but three of you live at least 200 miles away.
Yep.
So that's
yep, this is our way to stay connected.
Yeah,
I live, of course, in the enemy central. But enough about us. We are here to use a tried and true podcast gimmick. And that is, Dan and I are going to draft. We're each going to draft.
Is this tried and true, or are we the first people ever to do this?
Yes, we're the first people ever
I thought we were the first people ever to do a podcast draft. I have not listened to every single podcast. I will check. I think we've invented this.
Certainly, we're the first two white men to do it.
Yes, that is true.
I mean, obviously, there's not a lot of those in the podcast.
The white men over 30. Maybe some younger or older. There might be some senior citizen white men out there drafting World War II books.
I'm 44, so I count in internet. So while we're just going to go back and forth and draft the reasons to continue watching the Red Sox this year, I'm not going to spoil anything here, but I would imagine we might get a little loopy with this. But that's how we want to be here, I think. Given that you are A, the boss, and B, brand new, I'm going to give you the honor and you can go first.
All right, appreciate it. I'm going to take an obvious one for my first pick. Because I think you told me you were going weird with your number one, although that might have also been when you had the topic wrong, so I'm not sure about that. But I'm going to go with the obvious one. The number one reason to keep watching this otherwise pretty miserable Red Sox team is to watch Xander Bogaerts, and specifically watch him chase the batting title. This is an easy one. He is, at this point, probably the greatest shortstop in Red Sox history. Peak Nomar was better than peak Xander, but now he's been doing it for longer. He hasn't had the sort of acrimonious final years that Nomar had. Maybe there's some Joe Cronin stands out there who are yelling at us talking about him. He's in the conversation, but I think Xander is cemented himself in that spot. So we're talking about a guy who's on the all-time Red Sox team, possibly playing his final games as a Red Sox. He's a joy to watch. He does everything well. He's fun to watch with his approach at the plate. He's fun to watch on the base paths. He's wonderful. I also personally have a little bit of a financial stake in this. I don't know if you have this, Brian. I have a weird psychological thing when it comes to how I talk about the Red Sox and Red Sox players with Yankee fans. I lived in New York for a while too. You've lived there longer, so maybe you've overcome this, but when I'm talking with you or with other Red Sox fans, I can be very clear-eyed about the team and critical and reasonable. When I'm talking with Yankee fans, that part of my brain shuts off, and it's like I have to defend the honor of the Red Sox, and they can do no wrong. And so back, do you remember Xander's 2014 rookie year?
Vaguely.
Do you remember how bad it was?
More than vaguely.
He was so bad. He came up at the end of the 2013 season and was outstanding. And it was a 20-year-old starting in the World Series for them, was spitting on outside fastballs, and he looked outstanding. He was the number two prospect in baseball. My God, he completely forgot how to hit in 2014. He could not hit an outside slider to save his life. Pitchers who didn't even have sliders in their arsenal were like learning them when they played the Red Sox just to make Xander look foolish, and it worked. And I was driving up to my bachelor party with two Yankee fan friends of mine, and they were just talking so much shit about how garbage Xander was. And I felt the need to step up and defend his honor. I mean, at this point, I had been talking to them about this guy for 3 years as he was coming up through the system. And so I ended up getting an argument with these two guys. I made three bets with them. I made three $100 each bets, so $600 total. The first bet I made with them was that the Mets would make the playoffs more than the Yankees over the subsequent 10-year period. Which that bet actually looked really good at the time. This was when the Yankees were like still saddled with the Sabathia and the Teixeira contracts. And this is right when Harvey and Syndergaard and DeGrom were coming up for the Mets. That bet actually looked pretty good. I am pretty sure. Have the Yankees clinched? They've clinched, right?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. So as of the Yankees clinching, I have lost that bet. I think it is now there's one season left of the 10-year run, but it is now impossible for the Mets to make the most season more than the Yankees. The other bet that I made was that Xander Bogaerts would one day win an MVP award. That was just not smart from the start. And then the third bet I made was that he would make the Hall of Fame one day. And so I've been tracking. I have a lot vested in his career and his career numbers. And I don't know if you know this, but Xander, for as good as he has been, he has actually never led the league in a single major statistical category. He's come close. He's come close in doubles. I think he actually finished second in doubles in 2019 to Devers, if I recall. He's come close in doubles. He's come close in hits and runs a couple of times, but I don't think he's actually even ever topped 200 hits. So this batting title would be the first time he's led the league in a statistical category. So, you know, when you're talking about that all-important Hall of Fame black ink metric that they look at, this would be his first black ink. So I need it to happen. The fact that if he wins, he'll take it away from Judge is just a cherry on top. So that's my number one easy, Xander Bogaerts.
Okay, like as much as my list is like audio shit posting, I did have him on it. And I have to say that yeah, it's as anyone who's passingly familiar with my recent work at Over the Monster knows, the Mookie trade broke me with respect to many things, but including my relationship with Yankees fans around here. Especially like I used to not wear Red Sox hats when the Yankees would beat them or when they, you know, if they're in last place because I didn't want to deal with their crap because now I don't care. And people are like, oh, Red Sox. I'm like, do you think it's doing me any favors? Like, it's my hat, man. Like, no, they're not good. Congrats. To that end, my number one pick is to watch Aaron Judge humiliate the Red Sox by setting the home run record for the American League this weekend.
That is going to happen, isn't it?
Well, but it is a little bit bittersweet in the sense that it does give the Sox comeuppance, which I love, just narrative comeuppance. Except it's not a one-to-one situation with Mookie because he's older, obviously. He's been on the Yankees for a long time. So if he leaves, it's sort of they're following in the Red Sox footsteps, kind of, because it's not, they're not going to trade him.
I
Because
mean,
they
he
never
is,
would trade him.
yeah. Again, not to get ourselves pissed about the Mookie trade one more
I'm
time.
already there. You can't bring me down ever from
Yeah,
there,
but I mean,
so.
Judge is 30, right? So I mean, he, you know, that Mookie was still at the front end of his prime when the Sox traded him. You can make a much more clear-eyed baseball case for letting Judge walk than you could trading Mookie Betts, but we don't have to get in there right now.
Of course, but no, but in on a serious note, they were the new regime, the Bloom regime. I think that it is generally acknowledged. Like it wasn't that Chaim Bloom was like, guys, I want to trade Mookie Betts, and the owners are like, oh my God, it's the work the other way around. But the Judge year shows the wisdom to me of looking at it and say, don't trade super elite talent 1 year out because you want to get something back.
Because they might win the
let
Triple Crown
him
the next
play
year.
it out let them play it out let them make a case for themselves even if that case prices them out of your own budget, which I think it's fair to say the Red Sox never had a budget that was commensurate with Mookie's talent. But at the same time, let him go out there and show you what he's got. Now, obviously, 2020 was fucked six ways to Sunday, so whatever. However, that is my number one choice because that the bad Red Sox seasons, I have to give them credit for this, are incredibly bad. And they have these incredible narrative moments like the Rays last day of the season in whatever 2011, 2012, whatever year it was. This would just be one of those. And I can't wait to see it. So this is not a snake draft. So you are up next.
Well, I can't I can't share your enthusiasm for watching Aaron Judge hit home run number 62. I am also extremely petty when it comes to Yankee accomplishments, specifically against the Red Sox. And this goes way back. Remember the Mike Mussina almost perfect game that
Very,
Carl Everett
very,
broke
very,
up with two
very,
outs?
very, very well.
There was I think Bob Ryan wrote a column the next day that was like, oh, I wanted to see Mike Mussina finish the perfect game, and any true baseball fan would, blah, 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 blah. No, fuck that.
No.
I jumped for joy when Carl Everett sliced that ball into left center field. I did not want to see Mike Mussina throw a perfect game in Fenway Park, and I cannot disagree with you more. I do not want to see Aaron Judge hit a home run that A isn't even the home run record, but because it's New York and it's the Yankee fans, everyone's just going to pretend it is. I do not want him to hit this home run against the Red Sox and just to have to watch that for the next 20 years.
I got bad news for you. It's going to happen.
It's going to happen.
But
who do you think is going to give it up? It's definitely Ryan Brasher, right?
God, that would be amazing. I have to say, it's a little apples and oranges for me. Like, obviously, I did not want Mike Mussina at the perfect game, the Red Sox. And when Carl Everett came up, I was like, he's getting a hit because no one gives less of a shit than Carl Everett. But I am, and I think this is just because maybe I have Stockholm syndrome here. I have never been able to summon much outrage over Aaron Judge, because if I was like a kid, and I was a Yankees fan, outside of being cursed for life, that would just be like, he's this goofy guy who hits home runs. Like,
he is the sort of prototypical baseball slugger. And I do have to admit, I mean, it's delightful, the fact that the Yankees have already cost themselves at least $100 million. And yes. with every home run he hits from here on out, and if he does edge Sander for the batting title and get the triple crown, it's just more money that they got to give him. Rooting for that. I want all of the owners to pay all the money anyway.
I do want Xander to win the title. Yeah. So there's that. All right, you're up next.
All right, my number two pick again. I think it's a fairly obvious one. These are Dennis Eckersley's last games in the booth. Dennis Eckersley, I think, is the best color guy of my lifetime. I think he's better than Remy. And I just don't mean on Nesson either. I think he's better than any national color guy. I think he's better than any color guy for any other team's broadcast. He is so damn enthusiastic about baseball. He's so fun in the booth. I'm really going to miss him. And I got to tell you, Brian, too, I'm a little worried about the Nesson booth going forward.
Oh, I'm not a little worried.
You're a lot worried.
I'm a lot worried. I mean, Eckersley is it's not just baseball he's enthusiastic about. He's enthusiastic about life.
True.
Especially, and look, I'm one to talk, but like, there's a lot of just negativity. Like, say baseball's a game of failure, and it like sort of breeds some negativity and attracts negative people like me. But Eckersley cuts through it so effortlessly to bring the joy to the forefront. And it's a shame. I totally understand. I would probably leave if I was him too at this point. And my only hope for the booth going forward is that Uke gets more involved, because I think he's wonderful.
I do think Uke is the best guy that they've tried out, for sure.
But after that, it gets late pretty early.
I have a confession to make, that when they initially made the switch from Orsillo to Dave O'Brien, I actually kind of thought it was the right move at the time. Orsillo, I never warmed up to Orsillo that much. I loved Sean McDonough. I would be so happy if Sean McDonough came back to do the Sox games full-time on Nesson. I never warmed up to Orsillo that much, and I did kind of like Dave O'Brien on ESPN. But God, seeing Dave O'Brien every night now, he is just one of the most boring announcers I have ever heard in any sport. I can't, I was watching a game the other night and they're talking about Judge versus Ohtani for the MVP, you know, and Dave O'Brien brings up the, well, let's think about this here. Shohei Ohtani is doing this on a last place team. How valuable can you be? Like, this, the same conversation that we have had for 40 years, and he's bringing it up as if he's the first person to ever think about it. And it's just, I don't know, he never has anything interesting to say. I don't care for him. And now without Eckersley too, I'm really worried.
Okay, I think that you disparaging Saint Orsillo is worse than me picking Aaron Judge first on this list.
Oh, God, come on.
How?
You think he's better than McDonough was?
That's not the argument. Let me tell you something. Since I went to college, I grew up with McDonough. McDonough's great. And I saw a game this year that McDonough was doing, and it was just like, oh, God, this is great. Red Sox game.
It's delightful.
Or maybe I listened. I don't remember. But the thing about Orsillo to me was that in the early days, I forgot he wasn't McDonough because it sounded so much like when he was sort of finding his place that he sounded like McDonough. But then once the personality started coming out, obviously he's just a giant goofball.
He is. And look, I am repenting and confessing here. Like, I was wrong about that for sure. And the Padres have been my West Coast MLB TV team for a couple of years now, pretty much ever since Tatis came up. He has such a good, I can't remember the name of the Padres color guy, but the two of them have such a good rapport. And so I listen to late Padres games and I miss him for sure. I was wrong. I confess that I was wrong at the time.
Yeah, I was very surprised when McDonough was when he left. Seemed to me like he was going to do that forever, he was the guy.
Well, he was. I mean, remember in the 90s, McDonough was calling World Series games and Final Fours. He was like a major figure. So it actually wasn't that surprising to me, I think, when he left. You're like, yeah, he's a major national figure. And then he just kind of fell off the radar.
I just thought because, you know, he was the second generation hometown guy that he was going to plant his flag in being the Red Sox guy, even though, like, obviously you're close to ESPN, you have many different opportunities. And I don't, you know, that's his life and it's great. I think he's done what he's wanted to do. I am not surprised that, and you felt this way a little bit, that like people were a little bit put off by Orsillo at times, but it's the replacement that's like the real shame, because it's just O'Brien. And O'Brien and Maz is just the most pain. It's unbearable.
They are brutal. Maz is better in the booth than he is on the radio show, at least. But that's damning with faint praise. Yeah. I would love to see Uke. I don't know if Uke has a lot of business interests going on. He he roasts coffee and brews beer and stuff. I don't know if he has 162 games in him.
No, I don't. He doesn't. And I think that honestly, the way they're approaching the booth is kind of similar to the way Chaim Bloom approaches the starting rotation. I mean that dead serious. Like,
yeah,
they have like six or seven guys who are able to go, and then it just goes depends on. Like, you know who else I love in the booth? And this is another thing that might get me excommunicated here.
Mm-hmm.
Is Roger Clemens. Oh, every time he's in the booth, I'm able to put my former feelings of him as a player in the past. I think he's a good person in the booth. He's smart. He explains things really well. And I sort of forget that it's him as it's happening. So it's not like constant haterade, but I understand
I think you are right to an extent. The few cameos where they've had him pop in, my initial reaction is always to roll my eyes. And then I think you're right. Like, you know, he talks to them for an inning or two, and you're like, well, you know what? That wasn't so bad. That was kind of interesting. I do not think, though, as you just said, that Roger Clemens is smart. And I think if he were to spend any significant time in the booth, I think he would say so many stupid and insensitive things over the course of 50, 60 games that it would end up being a train wreck.
That's fair. I think he's baseball smart. And the other thing is he's not, unlike every other person who's a booth, Clemens is not Red Sox specific. Like, I'm sure he does the same thing with the Yankees. I'm sure he does the same thing with the Astros.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, all right. Trying to think of what I, because I had Eckersley too. I just wanted to get the judge thing out there. I'll just do another ridiculous one that we wouldn't have been able to do yesterday, and we could do today. Is so you don't think about the Ime Udoka situation with the Celtics. Because you were thinking that, hey, look, at least we get to the Celtics. You know, the Patriots aren't great. Celtics, favorites in the Eastern Conference, depending on where you look. And now, you don't want to think about that stuff. So let's just settle in. Let's watch Xander go for the batting title. I mean, obviously, this is sort of tongue-in-cheek, but it is pretty funny to me that the Red Sox, that Boston, two of the four major Boston managers are likely to have had full-year suspensions within a four-year period.
Wait, you think he's going to get suspended for this?
Oh, yes. For a year. But not by the NBA, by the Celtics.
By the Celtics.
Yes.
I would be... Maybe you're more in the loop than I am. I only briefly sort of got the gist of it. And from my understanding was that they're really, that he's not in jeopardy.
I think he is. We'll see. I mean, obviously we're recording this Thursday morning as this story is breaking, but, it's not great. And, little garbage time Red Sox baseball is a good way to keep your mind off of. I think the details are actually going to come out and be pretty bad, too.
You think they're going to be ugly?
I understand why Alex Cora was suspended for a year, but I just didn't care. I think that this...
Has this Nia Long come out and said anything about this yet, by the way?
I don't believe so. Yeah, it's tough out there. I think that, like, cheating is one thing, and especially in today's climate, which I'm not saying is a bad thing, anything of a even remotely sexual nature, there's no downplaying the badness of it. So we don't need to stick on this because it's not. So I just think it's going to get worse before it gets better. So I think for the next 2 weeks, people should just watch the Red Sox.
That's fair. I guess, I don't know. He certainly is going to get suspended for a period of time. I shouldn't have been dismissive of that. But I guess I was just thinking it'd probably end up being like a couple of weeks or something.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Because from what I understand, it's obviously fits the definition of workplace sexual harassment, given the power dynamics. He's the second most powerful person in the organization. From what I understand from it being, as far as everyone's reporting, completely consensual in both ways, like, I think it's going to be the type of thing where he's going to miss a couple of weeks, and then the Celtics are going to say... it's a personal matter between these two people. We don't want to air their dirty laundry in public, and we're moving on.
All right. Well, let's hope so.
That's right.
Speaking of moving on, you're up.
All right. My number three pick, moving from the booth back to the field, Brian Bale. I don't know if you listened to the podcast I did with Keaton a couple of weeks ago. I did the pre-cap with him.
If Keaton's on it, I ain't listening.
That's what I figured. So I did the pre-cap with him, and we did it right after Bayo's start against the Blue Jays. And I set up this big dramatic moment where I said, Keaton, I think what Brian Bayo did last night against the Blue Jays was the most impressive thing a Red Sox rookie has done since Rafael Devers homered off Aroldis Chapman in Yankee Stadium. And Keaton went, yeah, that's about right. And just completely burst my dramatic bubble. But I stand by that. He is by far the best pitching prospect we've had come up since Buchholz through his rookie year no-hitter. I love watching him. I am so weary and sick of young pitchers, young Dominican pitchers getting compared to Pedro. But Bayo's changeup, man. Bayo's changeup is really nasty. So I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to make that comparison myself, but he is outstanding. He has just gotten better and better all season long, even starting with Worcester. He got better and better. Coming up with the Red Sox, he's getting better and better with each outing. I love this guy. I think he's fun to watch. He's passionate out there. He seems really smart based on, you know, some of the interviews I've read with him. So I like this guy. I am invested. I am ready to get my heart broken when he needs Tommy John in 16 months.
Yeah, that's the only reason that I wouldn't be on the same train is that yes, it is so refreshing to have a homegrown pitching prospect worth a damn. Like, it's, God, it's incredible.
It's been a long time.
But I just, my thing with pitchers is that it's like you take the Michael Wacha season this year, it's just like, this is great. But like, if they're not competing, basically, Bayo needs to develop. So it's good that he's getting these reps. But it needs. I do not take for granted health, especially with young pitchers. Like, I don't do it. So I get it. Like, it's awesome. And my third pick is very similar. It's just Tristan Casas. Mm. Period. Mm-hmm. Because I think that he is.
Baseball hipster.
Yeah, I think he's the next, like, Red Sox superstar. I see that swing, and I see peak Cody Bellinger, which obviously didn't last very long. But right. It was great when it did, when it was popping off. And out of the way this roster is constructed, you can sort of tell transitional pieces. You know, obviously, we don't know what's happening with the long-term pieces with respect to Bogart / Devers, but I just love Casas. You know, we've been waiting for this for such a long time that I look at it different from the Bayo situation because I think that it's the results may not be as good now, but we're just going to see growth, slow growth. And so it's just fun. Just fun to see the guy hit dingers.
It's particularly fun watching a guy like Casas too, where he is a prospect who has pretty much everything put together right now, except for one thing. And that's consistently, you know, making contact against lefties. And so it's more fun watching him try to figure that out. And he's clearly a very smart hitter. I mean, I wrote a piece for the site a few weeks ago that was just about one single foul ball he hit because I was so impressed with the swing he took. It was against a left-handed pitcher, and like it was, you know, this was right after he had hit his first major league home run against the Rays, that bomb he hit in the Trop. And he came in to face a lefty his next time up, and he shortened his swing and did an inside out swing and was just trying to hit a line drive over the shortstop's head, which is just, I mean, it's so rare to see any major league hitter use two different swings these days. Because they tend to be so picky about their mechanics and so worried that if they get too cute that they're going to mess something up. So that in and of itself is rare. And it's even more rare when it's a rookie. And when it's a rookie whose future is like you said, as a guy that's just going to mash a bunch of long home runs. I love this guy.
I think those are great points, especially when you compare him to someone like, I don't know, who had great success in AAA, but couldn't translate it, whose name may sound like Darren Jaran.
Mm-hmm. Or Bobby Dalbec. You know,
there's a difference with Dalbec is that I think that if people were being honest, this is always what Dalbec was going to be. Mm-hmm. Jaran, like a lot of people, like you could say Jared Kelenic too. Like the jump from AAA to the majors is so big right now because of the pitchers in Major League Baseball and how good they are.
I think the 2020 season had something to do with that too. All of these guys losing a year of development.
Yes. But also, you see that Duran comes up and is just trying to do what used to work and sort of hoping it still works. And then, you know, you have to mess with that a little bit, but it hasn't worked. Whereas Cassis is immediately, as you said, into problem solving mode. And that's, he doesn't need to set the world on fire. What he needs to do is be a problem solver because he has the talent. And for him to come in there and be able to do that rather than fighting to look like a major league player is huge. And it's why every time he's at bat, I love to watch it.
Are you good with us going into the 2023 season with just Casas and Hosmer as our first base options? Stumped ya.
Yeah. If I knew what Chaim Bloom was thinking at any given time, like I am at the point where I'm like, what does it matter what I think? I just want, I mean, why does Hosmer have to be? I mean, I know why he does. I mean, given what they rolled out there this year, I would have to say, like, it seems like an improvement to me what they started with at the beginning of this year. Now, look, they didn't do anything this year, but
yeah,
it does. To me, that still represents a step forward. So,
well, maybe. I mean, as you and I just discussed, he's not Bobby Dalbec, and the two of them shouldn't be compared. But we did. Bobby Dalbec did have a hell of an August last year. There was reason to believe he could be a major league first baseman, and we were wrong about that. Tristan Casas, for as much as I love him, for as much as I love his approach at the plate, he still hasn't done what Bobby Dalbec did last August.
That's why they should have traded Bobby Dalbec in the offseason.
Well, he doesn't have any value left, so too late.
Well, there's a, hold on, the thirst trap community would probably disagree with you on that, but other than that.
Is Bobby Dalbec a heartthrob? Am I that disconnected?
He seems to be popular among the people I follow who are into this sort of thing.
Yeah, I guess I could see it.
All right.
Aesthetically, I hate when really tall ball players wear their pants all the way down to the cleats and don't show any sock. And Bobby Dalbec is a big offender of that. So I think he looks ugly in a baseball uniform.
Wow.
Get those pants.
Wow. We're gonna tell him you said that. All right, your pick number four.
All right, number four. So Brian, you and I are both children of the '90s to an extent. We both came of age with a Fenway Park with a pre sellout streak Fenway Park. And I'm not suggesting that I miss the days when the Red Sox were mediocre, and miss the days when the ballpark was half full on a lot of nights. But part of me does miss a little bit of the sort of weird Fenway that kind of existed in those days, you know, especially in like April and September days when there might only be 18,000-20,000 people in the stands. Fenway could get kind of weird and kind of interesting. As a kid, it sometimes felt like a little bit dangerous going into Fenway sometimes. So I am hoping that we get a little bit of weird Fenway back one of these games in the remaining homestand. I hope we get a game that's like delayed by 2 hours of rain, and so there's only 10,000 people in the stands, and everyone moves up close to the field, and it's just a bunch of drunk college kids, and they are doing weird, sarcastic, ironic chants, and we just get a little taste of weird Fenway back. I don't want it full time. I'll take the sellouts, but I would just like a little sort of reminder of the Fenway of my youth.
This is an incredible choice. This is incredible. I love this so much, especially because, look, you know, I've been to Fenway a bunch, but I've lived in New York for over 20 years now, and I went to the old Yankee Stadium, been to the new one. Say what you want. The old Yankee Stadium, like Citi Field, they were dumps. They were awesome.
I never made it to the old stadium. That's one of my big regrets.
It was so loud, and it would literally rock. Now, I'd also... I wasn't rooting for them also, but it was just objectively cool if you were to take someone from, like, Europe, mm-hmm. even if they didn't know, or someone who didn't know anything about baseball, like Timmy Trumpet. Suppose he didn't, mm-hmm. he wasn't associated with the Mets, and you just put him in that environment. Same way if you put him in an excited Fenway, he'd be like, "That this is awesome." Mm-hmm. That is gone. That is absolutely gone from yeah. both stadiums. And pretty much every one of the newer type of stadiums doesn't can handle either sellout, like it doesn't feel weird.
No.
And weird is good. And I love this choice to just maybe it'll wake something in Dave O'Brien. Like maybe that because he is the perfect exemplar of like the not weird Fenway.
Yeah. I do think a little bit of it came back last year, mostly because of COVID more than anything else. So you know, all of the private equity executives who live in Weston, you know, weren't working in the city every day. They were working from home, so they weren't going to Sox games the way that they have been for the last 20 years. And so I think there was an extent to which last year that the sort of like the college kids kind of took it back a little bit down the stretch run. So I do think it came back a little bit last year.
That's
weird Fenway.
I think you just won the draft, frankly.
Yeah, I probably did.
Yeah. But I'll go with my fourth one, which is somewhat related. It's more Red Sox being weird. I want to see Tommy Pham punch someone.
Do you have any candidates to receive?
No, we just the whole point of having Tommy Pham is that something will happen at some point, and nothing has really happened since he's been here. So
do you want him to punch a teammate, or do you want him to punch Aaron Judge, Dave O'Brien? Who do you want him to punch?
That'd be amazing. Aaron Judge sets the record, and he's just like genuflecting. And
imagine what a nationwide villain Tommy Pham would be? I mean, he already is after the fantasy football stuff. But if he punched,
I don't think I'd recommend that anybody, literally in Major League Baseball, should punch Aaron Judge.
No, nobody in life should. Nobody should punch anybody. We should put that out as a PSA. Punching isn't good. But it's better if you're Tommy Pham and you're punching somebody on a baseball field.
I mean, after the Rudned Odor Bautista, we have the perfect baseball punch.
That is
so.
True.
So we don't.
You think that's better than Nolan Ryan and Robin Ventura?
I mean, it's a cleaner punch. The Ventura thing is a better fight, but as like a single image.
That picture of Ryan just with Ventura in the headlock. I mean, there's never going to be a better picture of a baseball fight than that.
It's it's unbelievable. So no, it doesn't need to be a punch. Like I want there to be a Tommy Pham incident.
Okay. Yeah.
That is ultimately harmless. Look, it's fantasy football season. It could happen.
It's true.
What if a Patriot came to throw out the first pitch, but he like fumbled on the 1 yard line? And, you know, Tommy Pham just goes out there and gives him an earful.
Yeah. Tommy, high roller Tommy Pham. Isn't that what he called himself, by the way?
Oh, yeah.
I'm a big deal in Vegas.
Yeah, messing with my money. Yeah. All right, your final pick.
All right. Actually, so my final pick will actually segue a little bit off of what you just said. I don't think you're going to like this one, actually, based on you know, I know your recent Twitter activity. I hate football, and I know you do not, and I know I'm very much in the minority, but I hate football. And so my fifth pick as to why you should keep watching the Red Sox is because the NFL just needs to calm down a little bit and wait its turn. The NFL is so big and obnoxious. And I think even people like you who, unlike me, do not hate football can agree that the NFL is just a little too inflated, a little too big for its own good. It is our, not to defend baseball owners in any way, but the NFL is our most corrupt sports league. It is our most socially destructive sports league. And so by continuing to watch baseball in September and October, you are engaging in a small act of silent protest against all of that badness. So the NFL, you can just calm down a little bit, just wait for baseball to be done, then we can talk. That's my fifth reason. But I acknowledge that I'm in the minority there.
Well, what's really appealed to me about football as I've gotten older is the analysis of it has gotten smarter. It's sort of been moneyballed, but it can't be, but it also can't be moneyballed because it's so complicated. So what I like about it is that, like, unlike in baseball and basketball, where there was a statistical revolution and there was like, okay, hit home runs and shoot threes, and it's like that is the end of it. Like, there's other things, obviously. But it's obviously changed the gameplay. What I like about football, like, independent of the NFL, which I will not argue anything you said about the NFL. It's obvious. There's no point in arguing it. Roger Goodell wouldn't argue. Like, maybe the socially destructive part he would. But outside of that, I have just found it from an analytical perspective. It's weird. When I was growing up, there was a saw and it, like, went back to old sports writing. It was the smaller the ball, the better the writing. And I think that's kind of been totally inverted to some degree. Mm-hmm. Or not totally, but it's definitely been inverted to some degree because I find the level of like Mina Kimes and Pro Football Focus level, they can be a little off-putting, but not Mina. But like the Pro Football Focus can be like when people are trying to cut through early baseball analytics. But at the same time, they're interested. I'm learning the reason I like the NFL now. I did not expect to like it like this at this age. I expected to become, to get into where you are. But to me, I learn something new every week, and that's why I like it. But I get it. It's not for everyone. It's for most of us, just not you.
Just wait your turn. That's all I'm saying, football. Just wait your turn. Just calm down a little bit. You're the biggest sport in America. We all know that. It's football. It's gotten so, everything about it, from the draft to minicamp, it's just everything's so loud and obnoxious. I just want
it never to, like it to never stops. Away. There's just no off season.
Yeah, just sit down for a little bit. Just sit down and be quiet and wait your turn. That's my stance on the NFL.
My fifth pick is another shit post, of course, and it's just I'm gonna do two because I'm losing the draft anyway. It's one, how many errors can the Red Sox make on one play? That's one. And then two, what will Chaim Bloom say that irrationally pisses me off in the next 2 weeks? And actually, we can add one more. What will Mookie Betts do that will just make me infuriated all over again? Last night, he's hitting his 35th home run, so now he has 35 home runs and 35 doubles. I think that's good. You know,
it's pretty good.
It's just an opinion. But, obviously, it's a little gallows humor o'clock here. It's September 22nd when we're recording this. And
I'm worried that if I ever go to your home, I'm going to see like a poster of Chaim Bloom on the wall with the eyes scratched out.
No.
Even as someone who shares your Bloom skepticism largely, I'm a little worried.
I mean,
with where you take it.
I am, and I've tried to make this point, that I am not skeptical that his plan will work to some degree, because it's a little bit foolproof that they will be good to good.
Of course,
My beef about the past was that this was a team that didn't need blowing up in the time and fashion that it happened, and my concern about the future that can obviously be alleviated, and we won't know till we get there, is that I want them to be willing to go a level of all in that I'm not sure that he would be comfortable with, but that's his job and it's not mine. So I think that he has had to, partially of his own making, give lip service to a lot of things and at the same time he's been candid about a lot of things, and it's been hard to tell which. So it just depending on my mood, it just rubs me the wrong way. As everyone else has said, and you have said, and I have said, whatever. This off season will be the clarifying one, I think.
Yep, for sure, for sure. I largely agree with you. They did not need to blow up the team at the time they did. I think I don't blame Chaim as much as I blame the whole current financial structure of Major League Baseball. I think he's sort of a product of his time and place, where for some reason this idea has cemented in everyone's head that using money to build a baseball team is never the smart way to build a baseball team, even if you have money. But this is a topic for another show.
Yes, because we are done with the draft. Readers, you can grade, you can say who won. Dan won. But if you wanna throw me a bone, that's fine. So that is it. That's the Over the Monster podcast. I don't know. We don't know our schedule.
Do you have anything you want to promote on the site, Brian? Like, for instance, what your next article is going to be?
Of Dan asking me to write an article. Yeah, we'll get back to you, folks. You'll see it on the site when it pops up.
Can't wait.
So that is it for today. You can follow Dan at Over the Monster on Twitter. And you can follow me at Brian Joyner. That's Brian with a Y. Joyner with an I. Please rate and review us. And we will be back at some point.
Thanks a lot, Brian. This was fun.
Thank you.